Excellent. An ale for me. And for my officers. In fact, ales for everyone.
Oh. Turn backwards. Rick and work. And Will.
Oh, yes.
Hello and welcome to Ten Backwards, a UK-based Star Trek podcast featuring myself, Will Turland, this man, Rick Everson.
Hello.
This man, Rick Palmer.
Guten Tag.
And occasional uninvited guest star, Gemma Turland.
Hello.
Today we're going to be discussing Star Trek Enterprise. Specifically Season 1. So I guess our motivation for looking at Enterprise was that with the upcoming new series, Discovery, it seemed prudent to go back and look at the most recent Star Trek series and see what that first season was like.
And Discovery, I guess, is a follow-up to Enterprise, essentially.
It is. It's going to be set after Enterprise before any other series, so it's kind of like Enterprise 2. This time it's Discovery. Yeah.
And then Enterprise is a prequel series, and Discovery is a prequel series, so that they've got that in common.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But Discovery is a prequel and a sequel, in a way.
And I suppose also Discovery is going to be a very new slant for Star Trek, and it's going to be very much of the modern style of television. It's being streamed, it's going to be more heavily serialised. And Enterprise, in its way, was also trying to move Star Trek on in the world of television.
Yeah.
Because it had retained its very episodic nature, apart from Deep Space Nine. And Enterprise moved away. It started introducing longer stories, more serialisation. It moved its technology on. It was the first high-definition broadcast Star Trek.
So, yeah, and widescreen.
Yeah, CGI all the way.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I think it was the brainchild of two writers, Rick Berman and Brannon Braga.
It is.
And it was always, I think, they pretty much from the get-go where they wanted to do a prequel series, I think. In my research, I didn't find anything about where they were considering following on, the next series being a follow-on from Voyager. Do you guys find anything about that?
No.
Were there any alternatives to the prequel in terms of what they might have done?
Not that I'm aware of. My thoughts on it were that, and I've said this before, one of the great things about, say, something like Deep Space Nine is it takes this idea of Star Trek where we've got the future where everything's done great and we've really solved the problems and made it and we're in this wonderful world. And what Deep Space Nine does is step back and say, how do we get that? How do we maintain that? And how do we fight? You know, what's the difficulties around keeping that sort of a world going?
What's the cost?
Yeah. And so what Enterprise does is take it to, we haven't got there yet, but let's see what those steps are. And that's a really interesting premise to me.
Yeah, true.
So I don't know if that's what's in their minds.
But I read that their early idea was that season one of this show would be set on Earth, and it would be about the kind of the finishing off of this first warp capable starship, and it wouldn't be just the first warp 5 ship. It would be the first major ship that was built on Earth for deep space travel.
That's interesting.
And looking at that, I think that some of those ideas, some of the way the characters are, and might have kind of gone into Enterprise, but been initially for that early idea. Some of the way that the characters behave, tension between the humans and the Vulcans, I think they might have written that based on the ideas that they had for that earlier iteration of the show.
Because
Enterprise is the first warp 5 capable ship, isn't it?
Yeah.
And at this point, it's 2151, and Earth already has some warp ships, I think. But they're like warp 2, warp 3, maybe. So they can kind of get around the solar system pretty quickly.
Mm.
They can go to, I don't know, like Vulcan, I guess. And Earth already has freighters, I guess. It has transport ships that go
up
and they do runs into deep space, but it takes and like a couple of years there.
Yeah, it's literally they're looking at years of their lives travelling from one point to the other, kind of thing. So, and these are Warp 2 freighters, I think.
Yeah.
So I guess it's fair to say that Enterprise isn't always universally loved by Star Trek fans, or generally.
It's got, certainly it proved controversial for the first couple of series. They dropped Star Trek from the title, which was a bold move. I don't know whether they wished to separate themselves a little bit, or they wanted a... I'm not sure what the justification behind that was.
Yeah.
They had to go in, I think, because try to draw more people in.
And it's the only Star Trek show which has a theme tune with lyrics.
Indeed. Mm. And it's the only Star Trek series that has been cancelled. Apart from Star Trek, yeah. Since the original series, the first one that got cancelled. Another reason that we went back to look at Enterprise is that Rick had been watching a lot of Enterprise and said, oh, guys, can we do a podcast on Enterprise? And we were like, oh, all right. Mm-hmm. And then we started watching a lot of Enterprise, and we eventually decided, you know what, we could look at the whole of the first season.
Yeah.
Because, we got pretty into it. We got through the entirety of season one. We kind of thought, let's do it.
Shall we talk about Broken Bow then?
It kicks off with a two-part, doesn't it? The pilot, essentially, for Enterprise.
Yeah.
Two-part.
And we should just say at this point, we're expecting that the theme for this podcast will also be a two-parter, much like Broken Bow.
Yes.
Yeah, it's been a long time. It's been a long road getting from time is finally here.
let's talk briefly about the elephant in the room. That theme tune.
That's very rude to talk about Rick.
Rick, I wasn't. I was.
My trunk is up in rage.
I know. It's a good thing this isn't a video.
On the wrong end of my tusks.
But yeah, the theme song. I hate it. How did you feel about it, Rick?
I'm gonna be honest. I really fucking love it.
I do. I knew you were gonna say
that. I was on the journey here because it's about an hour's drive to get here for podcast, and I had it on about four or five times through the journey.
You are kidding.
Singing
me.
To it. How? Quite passionately.
Does anyone else think that it's Scott Bakula doing the singing?
Honestly,
no.
I've never
thought.
Nope. If I'd have heard that theme tune four or five times on the way on an hour long drive, I would be in a ditch somewhere and I'd be happy to be dead.
I found that it grew on me. I think, I found that it grew on me. I don't dislike it as much as I remember disliking it. But I was watching a couple of episodes, maybe a day, and I don't know, it wears you down, I guess.
To me, it's just...
It's not great.
It's just offensively middle of the road. Mm. Like, it's horribly mediocre. It's fine.
The lyrics are very kind of generic.
Yeah, it's like gentle.
Perfect for the theme of the show.
It's also... It's also sung in a very lacklustre way. And the guy singing it, he's just getting to the end of the song, really. And it's a really odd way to start an episode with
a gentle
sigh,
middle of the road soft rock.
Yeah, it's appalling. And
I reckon they probably would have had something different, but they could afford this song.
Because me and Rick were saying, why not like Rocket Man by Elton John, or
John would be perfect,
or something from Bowie.
Yeah,
you know,
Captain Archer going into space with his friends, but not the Vulcans. That song.
Yeah.
That's a brilliant song.
That's my favourite Bowie song. Can't believe they didn't use that. It was incredibly sort of specifically related to the series.
But anyway, we're at a point of disagreement on this.
Yeah, and I think we're never gonna. Fans were pretty divided over that theme tune as well, weren't they? And I guess, and I think because it was the first, it's not an orchestral theme; it's a song instead of a theme, and I think that got some people's backs up.
So possibly fans were divided into those who hated it and me.
Yeah, I think you could be right.
Because it was made not that long after Voyager finished. Almost, I mean, I guess they started
straight away,
essentially. Mm. So it doesn't seem like it was. It seems weird to do a couple of things to make this not immediately associated with Star Trek, like taking out the Star Trek bit of the titles, having a different kind of theme tune. It seems it's not like there was a gap in time between Voyager and Enterprise, so it wasn't. I don't think. It seems like this project wasn't put together with the element saying, "Well, we really need to get some people watching this that aren't Star Trek fans." Because
I think though that,
but
that
maybe there was that. I don't.
Yeah. I think that maybe there was. I think we're coming to the end of Voyager, and we had by Voyager's end that had been 14 years solid Star Trek.
Yeah,
there had been a series on for 14 years between Next Gen, Voyager, and then for 7 years in the middle of that we'd had DS9. So for 7 years, you had two Star Trek series going at once. We'd had a lot of Star Trek.
Yeah, films
and I think
as well.
There were concerns about franchise fatigue.
Mm.
And so they said, I think there probably was a push to make something different.
I think the prequel bit is enough. I definitely think that a series set after Voyager, what would you do? What would you do that hasn't been seen before? So but we can get down to this later, but. Yeah.
I mean, as much as I'd love to see a series set post Voyager now, I think at the time,
that's good, isn't it? Because there's been 16 years. So
yeah, and I think that's because we've gone back. We've had the Kelvinverse movies, and when we've had Enterprise. So yeah, I think it's because we've had those sort of prequel series that I want to move on. But yeah, I think after Voyager, a prequel series. You know, in retrospect, that was a pretty good decision, actually.
So Broken Bow was, its original air date was September 26th, 2001.
Mm.
Or 2001, however you like to say it.
I remember it.
And it had 12.5 million US viewers.
Hmm. It opens with a really good explosion, with a sort of a confusing sequence where There's a Klingon chasing an alien. You don't know who this alien is.
They're chasing him.
Oh, okay, good. All right.
Were you watching it backwards?
Oh, that's it. I'm going to rewind. Yeah, that's right. And then the Klingon fires at the
He tricks them
the
into going into a silo full of poop.
Yeah, and then it's like... It's a good explosion.
It is a good explosion.
I was really impressed with it. I was impressed by that, and it holds up well all these years later. It's a confusing but pretty gripping pre-credit sequence.
And
I like
the aliens, the aliens that are pursuing this character who's a Klingon, they're from the get-go. You can tell these are aliens we haven't seen before.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and they do stuff that you don't expect.
Yeah, they stretch and flatten their bodies
underground powers.
Yeah.
They've got the ability of tombs from the X-Files episode. Tombs.
Well, one of them does, because he opens the door and lets the other one in. So we don't know that they both have that ability.
That's true.
Squidgy power.
I think later on we'll discover the Suliban of the Cabal are given genetic enhancements. Not necessarily that they all get the same ones.
Yeah.
So I think some of them have superpowers of some kind, but not all. So.
Yeah.
And that Klingon is called Klang. Really? Klang? Like a bell or something. And no one makes a For Whom the Bell Tolls joke in regards to him later, which is a missed opportunity.
The idiot.
I do wonder that surely you could have thought of a different name.
Yeah.
But he's then wounded by a farmer who's come out to see why his silo's exploding.
With a space shotgun, I noticed.
Yep. And then So then the episode goes on, and the idea is that the first Warp 5 capable starship, which isn't quite ready yet,
no, just weeks away from launch,
is going to take Klang back to the Klingon homeworld, because the Vulcans basically just want to murder him because Klingon honor says that he should just be murdered, and the humans are saying, well, wait a minute, you know what?
Let's instead just hold back with the murdering.
Yeah.
Just a second.
Couldn't we not kill him and maybe just take him home? And actually, the Klingons might think we're pretty okay guys. And the Vulcans are like, no. And there's a really... this is a scene where we're first introduced to Jonathan Archer.
Yeah.
Isn't it? And there's a bit which I found wasn't particularly endearing, where he tells... We also meet T'Pol in that scene.
We do.
And she's being a little bit bureaucratic, and he tells her that he's going to knock her on her ass.
Yes. Yeah.
You have no idea how much I'm restraining myself from knocking you on your ass. Yeah.
It's like, wait a minute, is he actually said, does he mean he's threatening to punch her in the face until she falls down?
Yeah, essentially.
Is that literally, and like, it's, you know, his superiors don't do anything, the Vulcans don't raise an eyebrow.
He's restraining from knocking on her ass.
He says, I'm about this close to knocking you on your ass.
Obviously, Admiral Farrell is thinking, well, when he gets a little bit closer, I'm going to step in as a superior officer. But that's okay. That's an okay amount of closeness to knocking on her ass.
I did feel like that scene, it sets up a big part of the show pretty quickly.
The antagonism, like, Archer and the Vulcans.
It's an efficient scene. Like, the Broken Bow is an efficiently put together pilot. Mm. I think there's not any scenes that don't seem relevant. No.
Overall, it sets everything up very nicely.
Yeah.
It does a decent job. It's got a good pace to it as well. It runs along at a fair clip.
It's a good action-adventure story, I would say. Action. Compare it with something like Encounter at Farpoint or Emissary.
Mm.
It's a different piece. It's a fun kind of action movie.
Yeah, and I think, again, this is part of it. They want to draw in a larger audience.
Mm.
So let's get this action-adventure thing. And I know... So particularly with the upcoming Discovery, there's a lot of Star Trek fans there who have a problem with that. That say that Star Trek's being dumbed down and it's going to lose its stuff for the sake of, you know, JJ Star Warsification or something.
Yeah.
But do you know what? Star Trek's not going to survive on its current fan base.
Mm.
Star Trek needs to expand its fan base, and if it needs to draw them in with action adventure and then subtly bash them over the head with some quality Star Trek philosophical stuff, do with that. Because that's what's going to work.
I agree with that. That's what the original series did. Yeah.
The original series was essentially pitched as like a Western in space, wasn't it?
Yeah. Gene Roddenberry's entire thing was he wanted to tell morality plays, and he knew the only way he could do that was to disguise them as action-adventure Westerns in space. So that's what he did.
Mm.
That's what Star Trek's always been doing.
A lot of the sort of morality elements were totally sneaked in under the noses of the executives.
Yeah.
After the scene where we first see Archer, the next once that they get given the go ahead to take Klang back to Kronos.
Yeah.
And you get a few scenes with the rest of the crew.
Mm.
You get a scene with Travis Mayweather, Ensign Travis Mayweather, the pilot, and Reed.
Lieutenant Malcolm Reed.
And they're just having a bit of a chat near the transporter.
And that's good, because not only they established themselves and their positions, they established the transporter as a very new technology.
Yes, I thought it was a good scene. All the stuff kind of setting up the characters, you get a little bit of time with each of them.
Mm.
It's not too forced.
No.
You find out that Travis is... he grew up on a cargo ship.
Yeah, and he's very young and enthusiastic. And
he's a lot like Wesley Crusher in that regard. I thought in that scene, in that pilot, he has that kind of boyish enthusiasm. I think.
I don't know. Maybe he's nearer Harry Kim. Mm. Yeah. In a way, first space experience. I think that was mine, dear.
I'm sorry.
Just for people who aren't watching in the 25th century on the holodeck version of this podcast, Rick has just tried to steal Rick's beer, and Rick corrected him.
That's two different Ricks. It's not one Rick going mad.
Yeah. I think maybe both Ricks exist only in my head, And I assume sometimes that when people listen back to this podcast, they can only hear me talking to my two imaginary friends.
And also, sometimes you talk about one Rick and look at the other.
Yeah,
it's very confusing.
That is true. I do that. But anyway,
we've digressed somewhat.
Yes.
So yes, there's a really good scene, and it also slightly starts to set up Commander Trip Tucker, in that Reed does a really accurate impression of him.
Keep you sure, I'm a lieutenant.
Exactly.
And then we also meet Hoshi, but does that happen later on? Am I?
She's down in Brazil, isn't she? Yeah, she's teaching, a language class.
And she's reluctant to join the crew because it was meant to be, they weren't meant to be leaving, it was meant to be 3 weeks.
So she was going to finish the term she's teaching.
Yeah.
Archer in that scene is dressed like the man from Del Monte.
Yeah.
But yes, Hoshi's then drawn in by Archer playing a clip of Klingon language.
Yeah, yeah, she's like, oh, what's that?
Yeah.
Oh my word.
Do you know what it is?
On that starship.
Yes, that seems to work.
Yeah.
Hoshi's kind of an interesting one because she's reluctant to be in space, and it's quite an interesting, different thing. I'm not sure it always necessarily works.
No, but at least, I mean, I guess we'll discuss this a bit later on as we get into the meat of the series, but it gives her a character arc.
Yeah,
I mean, she develops over the first series, and certainly she's, I think at sometimes, particularly in Broken Bow, she maybe comes off as a little bit irritating because her reluctance to be in space comes up. Occasionally she does a little bit of screaming when she's in trouble and she has to be rescued.
The thing I noticed as well is that her and Archer's friendship is never really seen again because they clearly know each other quite well before this. But it's not something they ever kind of touch on ever really again.
And they
I'm going to come back to that, I think, when we talk about the characters more in depth. But I don't necessarily agree that they don't get on
or anything. But.
Yeah, because they make a kind of a big deal that you know, they know each other on the planet.
I need your ear.
Yeah.
Not the rest of you. Just a cool ear.
So quickly, as I say, it progresses at a good pace. And very quickly, the crew's gathered together, Enterprise is ready for launch, and she sets off, and very, very, very quickly is attacked by the Suliban, and they lose Klang.
Yeah, whoops.
I know, the whole point of the mission.
Good work, Archer.
Yeah, that was not a great start. But then they decide to see if they can track him down, or track the Suliban down, by visiting Rigel. Is it Rigel?
Rigel 10.
Rigel 10. So then we get our first look at an exotic alien locale in a sort of a Star Wars cantina type way.
Yeah.
And that quickly degenerates into a firefight.
Yes. That's right. So they meet a. There's another Suliban character who shows up.
Yeah,
she's called Sarin.
I think she was called Suliban exposition character type one.
Yeah, because she dies almost immediately.
Yeah, that's it. She survives just long enough to explain some elements of the plot before being killed,
and that annoyed me a bit. I was disappointed because I thought this could be a really interesting character. Maybe this is because in other shows, it'd be like Archer befriends this Suliban, and this Suliban maybe becomes part of his crew.
The thrust of her appearance is that she establishes the Suliban Cabal exists. They're being guided and aided by someone from the future as a maneuver in the temporal Cold War. She is part of a group of Suliban that work against the Cabal.
They're like regular Suliban, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah, non-genetically.
Although she has a power, doesn't she? Because she can shapeshift from human form to...
Yeah, she was in the Cabal, wasn't she?
Yeah. So then when you think, well, actually, yes, because your point that she could have been recurring and used again is like, makes her like Damar in the Cardassian Resistance or something.
Mm. Yeah.
It could have been an interesting thing. But... we can talk about that maybe when we explore the temporal Cold War a little bit later on.
Mm. It's not cold.
What? No. And there's very little of it, so that bit won't take long.
It's pretty cold in Rigel 10. It's snowing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good.
Archer's wounded in the firefight as they try to escape.
He's wounded saving T'Pol.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is crucial for what happens next.
Mm.
Yes. So it's they get him up to the ship, and T'Pol says she's taking command and Trip, as First Officer, is like, what? And T'Pol points out her rank supersedes his. And Trip backs down quite easily on that, I think.
Yeah.
It's like, you're not in Starfleet. He even says, I don't remember you joining Starfleet.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but aren't you just kind of an observer on this mission? I don't remember anyone telling me you were a member of Starfleet.
My Vulcan rank supersedes yours.
And she's just like, oh, yeah, but still, I'm in charge. And Trip's like, oh, okay then.
Just as a little aside, I thought that the rooftop firefight on Rigel 10 looked great.
It's amazing.
And in fact, I think actually generally all of Broken Bow looks great. The sets look great. Mm-hmm. The effects are really well done. And that phaser firefight on the rooftop in the snow it might be my favourite action sequence. Yeah. It looks good, and we've maybe not seen it.
Its action set pieces are very well done.
Yeah.
I should point out that Trip and T'Pol's argument about command also takes place while they are in their underwear rubbing gel.
Oh God, that's yes, of course. That's
a completely needless thing. Okay,
right. Yeah,
I appreciate that in Enterprise they want to somehow show that they don't have the transporters and the biofilters.
Mm. Underpants still exist.
Yeah. So you have a certain amount of decontamination concerns, and that's a little bit more primitive. But honestly, a little bit gratuitous. Yeah.
Well, my take on this scene is that it's like it feels cheap, and it feels like it's just played for titillation.
Mm.
And there would have been, to my mind, they could have solved that by having. Because there's loads of long, lingering shots onto Paul's midriff and the top of her bottom, where you see the beginning of the crack, but it's odd because
it's gonna have a beginning, dude.
Yeah, it's gonna start somewhere, right? But it's odd, and it might have worked if they'd have played it as if Trip was maybe attracted to T'Pol, and that was a point of view shot, because that then, I mean, it would have been some thinly disguised titillation, but there'd be an argument to say, well, it's telling you something about his character. His character is attracted to T'Pol. Yeah. But they don't.
Yeah, they could have portrayed decon that didn't involve them in the minimal clothing, rubbing glistening gel onto each other.
Yeah.
Fully clothed.
Yeah, maybe they didn't need the gel, or maybe they could have been behind some sort of frosted screens and showered with some sort of
thing. It could have
been
like, I've started something now.
And you haven't thought it through.
What's the film where they go down in, there's some things happened and they go down into a pit?
Revenge of the Sith.
Yes. And
Casino Royale.
They go down, down, and down. It's an old film, 60s maybe. And they go down and down and down into this lab, and they have to be decontaminated.
Apocalypse Now.
Shut up. And they have to shave off all their hair, and they have to be burnt.
Who's in it?
I don't know. It's an old film. It is a classic. It's really annoying.
Is it set in space?
No, it's on Earth. Something like I think it's an alien virus or something.
The Andromeda Strain.
Yes, the Andromeda Strain.
That
film's mentioned. That film's shown in the Star Trek Enterprise Film Club.
I love the Andromeda Strain. It's a great film.
You don't love it from the description.
Michael Crichton.
Guess who directed it? The guy who directed Star Trek the Motion Picture.
Oh, did he? I thought it was a Michael Crichton directed one, because
he wrote it.
Yeah, he wrote it, but he also did. He did a bit of a foray into direction. He directed Westworld.
Maybe
actually.
Anyway,
I thought we were talking about Star Trek.
Oh yeah, that's right.
I know what you mean about the decon scenes, but they don't bother me, because at least in the decon scenes, there's a half naked man as well.
Yeah, but he's crowbar in a half naked man as well. Yeah,
but so he doesn't have sexy underpants on.
There's a half naked man as well.
Proper titillation would have been two women lathering each other.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah, Hoshi and T'Pol maybe.
I'm fairly titillated by both of them.
Two women,
so, you know,
as
it's like,
what you mean? The Trip only attractive. Two women.
I'm not saying you should have done it.
No, no, I'm not saying you.
I'm just saying that proper titillation would have been.
That's another point to raise.
I just think
be properly titillated by Trip.
He is handsome.
Yeah, he's I mean, he's in good shape, and it's obvious from his. Anyway, but
he's got
but
good
yeah,
arms.
It just to me, it just felt. My problem with it is, it took me out of the episode because it was so obviously just titillation. It felt cheap, and I don't think Star Trek needs to do that. And if they just made a little bit of effort to disguise that titillation just a bit, try and make that part of the story.
Yeah,
I could have bought it, it just takes me out of it because I'm straight away just like, oh.
It also represents cheapness to female characters that has not it's not been a part of the Star Trek world.
You can't
since
imagine
the first.
Yeah, you can't imagine a scene like that on DS9,
no.
Can you? Or
Bashir and O'Brien lathering in potato casserole.
Oh, maybe Nog and Rum. Think
what
about that.
Oh, well, Jesus,
but hey, on Ferenginar, anything goes.
No, quite a lot doesn't.
Okay.
Where were we?
Oh God, can we move on from the decon scene, please?
Yes, we should.
So Archer wakes up, realizes T'Pol's taken command, and assumes that she's turned them back round to Earth. But shock, she's not.
What?
She's carried on with the mission and started trying to track the Sulawan ship.
Maybe those Vulcans aren't such stick in the muds after all.
So then, yes, there then follows that. It's basically all action from there on. Little foray to the Sulabon Helix. They capture a Sulabon cell ship. They learn how to fly it. They infiltrate the Helix. Get Klang back. And it's very, very exciting.
Yeah.
And we meet Silic, who's the main. I guess he's the kind of the main bad guy for season one.
Yeah. Yeah.
The temporal Cold War theme that runs through season one. He's the main adversary.
So they meet. Him and Archer meet in the chamber where Silic normally communicates with his benefactor from the future. Therefore, this chamber is a hive of temporal activity, which means they can do some cool Matrix-style slow-mo zoomy effects.
Yeah.
You see your hand. Where it says while you're moving it.
And then Archer is able to sort of dodge a phaser beam.
Which I kind of liked. I was okay with that. It wasn't brilliant, but it was okay.
Terrible.
At least they're trying to do something interesting visually.
And I quite like that they keep fairly vague on the temporal Cold War. It's like Archer's very minimal information at this point. So you kind of set up wondering what it is. So,
yeah,
I mean, I think we're going to discuss the temporal Cold War.
You
in some
say
detail.
You kind of like that. It kind of annoyed me that it was because to me it felt like it was vague because the writers hadn't quite worked out what they wanted it to be.
I read that they brought that idea in because they thought it was cool. Essentially, they wanted to give the show a kind of like an X-Files kind of vibe.
I totally see where you're coming from. There probably when I first watched it, there was a feeling of that. But I kind of was content to just sort of sit back and see what unfolded.
Yeah,
That's the thing about it. But it's really, really difficult to write a continuing storyline that involves time travel because everything that involves in those episodes can change everything so much. How do you frame that?
Yeah, and I think we'll get on to the temporal Cold War more later on, but I don't think it's entirely successful. And that sort of pollutes my view of Broken Bow as a whole, but overall I think it's a great fun action adventure, and as pilot episodes go it's fine. It doesn't have the emotional depth that say Emissary does. It's not absolutely batshit crazy like the TNG pilot, which is nuts, Encounter at Farpoint. But it's a good, fun action adventure. It does a solid job of introducing all the different.
Sets everything up
very
well.
I think it's got more in common with Voyager's pilot Caretaker.
Yes, yeah.
It's decent, fun action and sets people, gets the characters out there, puts them where they need to be.
Yeah. I didn't love Captain Archer in Broken Bow. He didn't quite do it for me.
But why don't we start our character analysis with Captain Archer then?
I think that we should. I think we should.
On Memory Alpha and I got the kind of blurb for each character that appeared in the Star Trek Enterprise kind of Bible, which I think is the document they put together to help the people making the show get an idea of the characters and the writers, I think.
Okay, so that's interesting.
This is the blurb for Captain Jonathan Archer, who was originally going to be called Jackson Archer. Early 40s. Physical, intensely curious. Born and raised an explorer by his father, an engineer who worked on the Warp 5 project. Unlike the captains in centuries to come, Archer exhibits a sense of wonder and excitement, as well as a little trepidation about the strange things he will encounter. He holds a grudge against the Vulcans, who he blames for impeding humanity's progress. But his science officer is a Vulcan, and he's struggling to reconsider those preconceptions. Although he has a strong sense of duty, he's a bit of a renegade.
Oof.
He's not afraid to question orders or even disobey them if he feels it in his gut that that's right. Archer was there when the first girders on the Enterprise were put into place, and when the Vulcans tried to suspend the maiden launch after the Broken Bow incident, claiming humans weren't ready for interstellar travel, Archer helped persuade Starfleet to press on. The Kirks and Picards and Janeways will one day have the benefit of the captains who preceded them, but Jackson Archer is the prototype. He's making history with every light year.
Oh, I like it.
Because he knows his captain's logs will be studied for years to come.
Yikes.
He keeps especially detailed reports.
If he puts those logs in cryogenic suspension because they're in a few years, they're going to stink. Pretend that they're poops.
Yes, I got that. Thank you.
Pretty clever, but... That's a fairly fair summation of what they're going for with the Archer character. I feel
at points throughout the season they struggle to necessarily put that down firmly into this character, though.
I got the impression that perhaps he was a character that they had from the get go with the original idea that it was going to be the first ever ship, because with Archer you get this sense that he's been mostly involved with building Enterprise. He's not.
Yeah.
You don't get the impression that he's an existing captain of another ship that's the most qualified. He's been involved in building this ship.
But he does have some experience getting out and about in the solar system, and he's. I'm sure they make reference to other missions
He mentions being on a Vulcan ship, I think. Yeah. I guess he has had experiences. But he's not someone that's coming from ready-made to be a captain, I don't think.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's true. I think he kind of grated on me early on. I didn't love him in Broken Boat. And there's a fairly early episode where I really didn't care for Archer's attitude at all, and that was in an episode called Strange New World,
where they
find a planet and they want to go and explore it.
Yeah.
And T'Pol very sensibly says, look,
Captain, there are a number of protocols you may want to consider.
Protocols?
Vulcan ships would begin by sending automated probes down to collect more detailed scans.
And Archer basically just laughs in her face. He's like,
it's like, you fuck idiot. Your probes.
Yeah.
We're going down there now.
We didn't come all this way to put our hands behind our back and, I don't know, he says something like that, twiddle our thumbs.
But we didn't come out here to tiptoe around to get the pod ready. I'd like you to put together the survey team. I assume that's not a violation of protocol.
He comes off like a pretty arrogant dick. Well, he puts on his NX-01 baseball cap.
I hate those. But the most galling thing is that at the end of Broken Bow, he says to T'Pol, if I'm going to pull this off...
There are a few things I need to leave behind. Things like preconceptions, holding grudges... This mission would have failed without your help.
He says that.
Yeah. And then he literally forgets that.
Yeah.
And
even in the episode 3, Fight or Flight, which I like, I think Fight or Flight is a really good episode. Even in that, he immediately kind of disagrees with T'Pol because she says, we need to leave this ship alone. because whoever did this is going to come back. And he's like, yeah. we need to look after these. We need to find out who these people were.
Yeah.
I just generally find Archer in the first series inconsistent. As you say, one moment he's saying, right, I need to put away my grudge against the Vulcans. The next is like, oh, you Vulcans, I'm not listening to you.
Yeah, and I was thinking, maybe what they've done is that they've filmed these episodes and they were originally going to put them in a certain order, and then they've changed that for some reason, because they've done that with other series in Star Trek, I think.
Yeah, I think they did it a lot with the original series.
But the production codes for season one, they are all sequential, so they have...
Mm. They do have references to the amount of time that they've been out, which is pretty consistent. So, I don't know. And there's stuff like, you know, he wouldn't turn back for anything. He'd carry on with the mission. And then, of course, as soon as they say, oh, we kind of really need these phase cannons, and he's like, right, let's go back to Jupiter Station.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but hang on, Reed and Trip, we can put these in ourselves. No, we've got to go back. And as it turns out, they get them built and installed real quick.
Another episode I really liked.
It's a great episode.
It's in my highest
list. I couldn't believe Archer's enthusiasm to run home to Jupiter Station to get stuff installed when Archer and Reed said they could do it.
Yeah, I think those kind of aspects to his character are fine, but if it was a younger captain, if it was like if you're taking somebody who has no experience of command, has essentially been involved in building the ship rather than being a captain, that's fine, but that's not really kind of looked into very much in terms of the way he does things.
It felt like they wanted him to be a bit closer to Kirk than say Picard, but he doesn't necessarily come off as that.
No, I just think they struggled to really consistently nail him down in the first series.
But actually, in my notes, I've realised I've mentioned I thought he was great in the season finale, Shockwave. He's really driven in that episode. He's really decisive.
It's like maybe the
writers and Scott Dracula himself kind of nail that character in that episode.
And in Fallen Hero as well, he's great. He's perfect. He does everything right. He gets every decision right. He does the right thing all the time. And why is he doing that now?
But that's later in the series, I think maybe they're starting to find the stride with him.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the thing. There is a key moment. I'm going to leave it until we talk about highlights, though. But there is a bit when I really get on board with Archer. But I should leave it to our highlights. It is one of my series highlights.
Is it where he feeds cheese to his dog?
No.
Because I have a problem with him feeding cheese to his dog, because he knows that cheese disagrees with Porthos. But he still gives him the cheese. It's like, well... Porthos can't make that decision himself. He's got cheese in front of him. He's going to eat the cheese. I'd do the same. I love cheese. It disagrees with me.
As someone with a puppy, sometimes the man, they give you that look with those eyes.
Dude, you're not the captain of a starship.
Cheese eyes. Here's the thing. I often find that a lot of his best scenes are with Porthos.
I've realised that in my notes on all the characters, I haven't written too much on Porthos, and he's maybe one of the best. He's got a good character arc. He learns not to eat as much cheese, because in the season finale, I don't think he eats a single bit of cheese.
No, and even T'Pol warms to him eventually.
In
season one, and she thinks humans are stinky, so dogs must be. Extra so.
Yikes.
What do we think of T'Pol's arc through the series, or her general character?
Blurb for Subcommander T'Pol.
Yes.
If I may.
Please.
Vulcan female, austere but sensual.
Oof.
She's a science officer assigned to oversee our progress. In exchange for star charts and tactical information, the Vulcans insisted we include one of their officers on the Enterprise.
Starfleet commander
reluctantly agreed. Not everyone is happy with this addition to the crew. Why do we need a Vulcan watching over us like we're children? T'Pol isn't thrilled with this assignment either. She was hoping for a Vulcan commission. The last thing she expected was to be living among a primitive, stinky, irrational species. I put in the word stinky. Primitive, irrational species. But she's resigned to this hardship post because she has no choice. She's not comfortable around the crew, or the emotions they display. Secretly, however, she will begin to envy humans. Now that she lives among them, she can't help but develop a fascination with their cultures. In private, she likes to sample their food and catalogue their behaviour. She even studies their mating customs. She can't stand the smell of humans when they're anxious. She's older than everyone.
Well, who can?
She's old. Everyone get yeah. Everyone get nervous farts.
Yeah, I have a real problem doing this podcast with you guys.
She's older than everyone on board, but she won't reveal how old she is. Hoshi is always asking about her age.
Bitch.
I did know that originally the character was going to be a T'Pau.
I think they did put that forward.
Who we see in Noctime.
Right, okay.
I'm going to have to bring up, at the point when you said austere yet sensual, the look on Gemma's face.
there was some eye rolling and...
It's a real kind of, like, how Alan Partridge might describe it.
Yes, yeah.
Austere, but sensual.
Oh, that's it, yeah, that's it, exactly. It's,
I mean, it is a ridiculous thing. She's a Vulcan and, you know, she's a very intelligent, accomplished person in her own right. And this sensual thing just plays to the point of the same thing that happened when they bought Seven of Nine.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, right, we need an attractive lady in a tight suit.
Yeah, they don't mean a sensual character, they mean a hot actress to play her. That is exactly what they mean.
And rub gel on. Gratuitously for no good reason.
Yeah. And wearing a uniform that no other character would, you know, Archer doesn't wear the uniform that T'Pol does because
Locks doesn't wear the uniform.
God no.
and also, from Broken Bow, you can kind of see why Earth, like why Archer and other people in Starfleet find the Vulcan's attitude annoying because they are. They are aloof and they are jerks, but T'Pol isn't. T'Pol is pretty, I mean, a little bit maybe early on, but in Strange New Worlds, she's just being sensible.
Yeah.
She provides a level-headedness, which is essential if you want your spaceship to survive. And
definitely
in Strange New Worlds, I found the human characters were pretty obnoxious.
Yeah,
I completely understand why Vulcans
particularly wound me right.
Yeah,
up.
Yeah.
I understood he was under the influence of alien spores or something.
And the stupid bloody baseball caps.
About the baseball caps, man.
Yeah, but I mean, I think I like the character T'Pol a lot.
I think that description is fairly accurate, except with a minor exception that. Hoshi, I don't think, ever asks about her age.
No.
It does come up, but I think more Trip and Archer.
It's a scene where Hoshi swears at T'Pol in Vulcan, right? I think?
Yeah. Well, she says something to her.
Yeah.
You might like to think it's swearing.
So, yeah, I mean, I think by the Andorian incident, I think that character settled in enough.
Yeah,
and starting to have a bit of a rapport with Archer. I get the sense in season one that maybe they were going to do a romantic thing between T'Pol and Archer rather than Trip.
I'd agree with that.
Yeah, the Trip T'Pol thing doesn't really kick in until much later, so it doesn't touch series one at all, I don't think.
No.
I don't know, I just think it's a bit, I don't know shit about the Archer T'Pol thing. That's a bit. I know there's an episode in series three where they kind of allude to it in a fake future, but never sits right.
Yeah, I really like that episode though.
That's quite.
I think when we get to Shadows of Pajem, that's the point where maybe you realise very subtly she's come to appreciate the crew and the environment.
Is that where she's maybe going to leave, but as an audience, you don't buy for a second that she's going to leave because it's like halfway through the season.
I didn't think that was a great episode because.
Yeah, I agree.
Because there's a bit where they get taken hostage and then you hardly ever see the hostage takers again.
And also, there's a scene where they're trying to get out of their shackles and they fall over. over and T'Pol's boobs go in Archer's face. And it's again, it's that titillation. And, well, but what
I
was
don't
it?
Know, because I was don't really understand how that scene was supposed to be played.
Was it meant to be funny?
Yeah.
Because it wasn't.
It felt like there should have been like a boing, kind of boobs in face. Yeah.
It's been executed to understand, was it supposed to be slapstick?
No.
Was it supposed to be a character moment where they'd be all awkward? But no, it was nothing. It
just made me feel awkward that even happened.
I felt like the... Because the antagonists should be the people who've taken them hostage.
I didn't get what the issue was, what their motivation was.
Yeah.
Exactly, and it felt like they were like, this episode's not going anywhere. We better write in some Andorians because they're cool and people like that. Like,
always happy to see Shran come back.
But it felt like we need to get the Andorians in.
And it
makes some more sense with this episode. Yeah, I thought Shadows of Pajama was a bit of a duffer.
Yeah, yeah.
I do feel, though, that... I said, she gradually comes to be fascinated by humans and want to stay and appreciates that and develops a loyalty towards Archer and Enterprise. But I kind of feel that a lot of the series, she's essentially abused by the crew because she doesn't conform to their human culture. Mm. Everyone's all like, oh, T'Pol just needs to loosen up, chill out, relax a bit.
Her
culture is about being logical and not expressing emotion. That's her culture.
Yeah, but it's quite interesting because it shows the crew in a bad light. Mm. And it does. And they are bullying the person.
But I don't know if we're meant to see them as... I think we're meant to see T'Pol as the one who's not fitting, whereas actually...
The line where they kind of make fun of her trying to use chopsticks and Trip's like, dinner and a show. And I'm like, come on.
It's bullying.
But bullying is never bullying from the eyes of the bully. So it's possibly an accident for them that they created it.
To be fair,
that way. It's an interesting.
The core cast isn't bullying. Is not something that only Enterprise is guilty of.
The TNG clique.
There's bullying in all of them.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
There's definitely bullying in TNG and. And DS9 as well, I think, sometimes.
Yeah.
Attitude to the Ferengis.
The Ferengis call that. Yeah, I don't know.
Quark fights back on that one. I think that's a very interesting way to... Whereas in this one, T'Pol just sort of shrugs it off. But,
you
make a good point. I think I was trying to work out with season one sometimes when these things happen. And like, is this intentional? Are they trying to show... them like this, or is it just unintended and I'm seeing it that way?
I think when you look at maybe all four series as a whole, you do see it soften and develop better, so perhaps it is meant to, but I don't know if we can credit the writers with that much foresight. I think they were trying to make comedy moments and give Trip like cool one-liners and stuff.
It feels like it's a miscommunication between the directors and the writers. It feels like it's been directed one way and performed one way, but it was written another way. And I don't know.
But there's a
scene that epitomises what you're saying about the bullying of T'Pol for me, which is, I think it's in maybe the. Maybe it's in like the first or second episode where Archer and Trip sit down for a meal with T'Pol, and she's a vegetarian because she's because all Vulcans are vegetarians, and they have like a massive bloody steak, and they're like they're really kind of not literally rubbing it in her face, but like they go oh this steak is delicious. Oh, look at this lovely! Hope you don't mind this bloody steak, T'Pol. Ooh, look at this—it's meat. It's like, wait a minute, there are vegetarians on Earth, and also, maybe just be a bit diplomatic. You know, if you're going to
cooking a breadstick with a knife is a bit silly.
Yeah, she's like, you know what, cute guys, I'm going to cut it with this knife. Look at this, I've done it perfectly. She just stuck it up their noses. But it's just like...
This is what makes me think that some of the lines, some of the ideas from it being Earth's very first ship kind of stayed in. Because it is, if this was their first, humans' first ever ship with this happening... that would make more sense. But this is not Earth's first ship. We've had this. They have other ships. I think there's a ship called the Intrepid, which is mentioned, and so we have started going out into space.
Met other cultures.
Yeah.
Met other cultures.
We've had nearly a century of contact with Vulcans.
So it just is a bit jarring because it's pretty unprofessional.
Yeah, and you know, if you were going for a meal with say you were going for a meal with an important business client, and you knew they were a vegetarian, you might not order the bloodiest thing on the menu. You might, maybe you'd bring it back to a burger, or maybe you'd even say, you know what, I enjoy a dish of pasta. I'm going to have pasta.
Yeah, I make us some veggie bolognese.
Yeah, yeah. Which is fine. And you know, that's just a little bit of diplomacy if you're trying maybe to get, you know, not to try and make a bit of a gesture to say, welcome into our culture. But what Archer and Tripp do, they're like...
I think it comes across much worse than maybe the writers expected it to.
Yeah, I think it's meant to be a bit of a comical...
It's
kind of a scene,
later on in the series there are two episodes together, Vox Solar and Fallen Hero, which are great T'Pol episodes.
And in
Vox Solar, T'Pol has to work with Hoshi, I think, in interpreting this weird kind of weird tendrily animal thing. And again, it's a rare opportunity where those two characters work together.
They
they work well together, and both characters get a bit of development. They, you know, they learn to respect each other a bit more.
Hoshi calls T'Pol out, saying, "You're way too harsh on me." And T'Pol's response is,
"If you feel I've been unfair to you, I apologize. But I hold you to a high standard, Ensign, because I know you're capable of achieving it."
And I really like that scene because actually Hoshi's forced to reassess her relationship with T'Pol and reassess what she thinks of T'Pol. And actually she kind of realised that, okay, that was T'Pol's motivation.
And by the finale, the very end of, what's it called, Shockwave?
Yeah.
So the kind of cliffhanger, T'Pol's in command of the ship. It's great.
Yeah.
It ends as a strong ending. So I think T'Pol's a really good character.
She's definitely one of the more memorable characters, I think she gets a lot of screen time because of that whole, because they want her to be on screen, because she's got a great body, because she's sensual.
Austere,
yeah,
austere but sensual.
Yeah,
can I just
that's
say,
it.
Out of all the characters, this is not mean that I'm attracted to him. I think Phlox is the most sensual of all the characters.
Wow!
I don't think
he doesn't like being touched though.
Oh, doesn't he? Wow.
Oh, but that makes it. Oh, but he's off limits. That makes him even more sensual.
Well, sensual as in he's into the food and he's into the experience.
I get what,
he's
get
more,
what you
way
mean.
More
he throws himself into experiences. Yeah, yeah.
I think with the time, then that brings us to a good point to conclude our first part.
Yeah, thank you so much for listening. Live long and prosper.
Cheers.
Bye.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for listening to our podcast. If you want to get in touch with us, our website is www.lowerdecksradio.co.uk. You can reach us on the Twitters at 10Backward, 10 being the numbers 10 and backward being the word backward. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/10Backward Podcast. And you can also email us at crew@lowerdecksradio.co.uk. On a personal individual level, my Twitter is @nerdrick. And I believe you two also have Twitters.
I do. Mine is @WillTurland.
Mine is @MrImhotep. MisterImhotep.
So please do get in touch, give us any feedback or suggest new episode topics, anything like that.
Let's make sure that history never forgets the name.
10Backward?
Laddie, don't you think you should rephrase that?
10Backward.
10Backward.
There, what do you call that?
The deflector's sequencing. It's perfectly normal.
Perhaps you'd like to go to your quarters and lie down. Ponfo, Maran. I was instructed to speak English on this voyage.
And I'd appreciate it if you'd respect that.